Thank you so much for joining us, Rachel.
Thank you.
Now, how can conversations about climate change lead to anxiety, especially with younger Australians?
Look, young people are, for a start, a little bit more inclined to be sort of catastrophic and think about the worst outcome. They don't have a good sense of context and risk and all of those sorts of things. So we just need to be aware that you're often dealing with a population of people who are already sort of primed, if you like, to leap to the worst possible outcome. But we wrote, myself and our geographer here at the University of the Sunshine Coast wrote an article for The Conversation, just also pointing out that, look, climate change is happening. It's going to happen. There's not much we can do about that, it would seem. In fact, I think scientists now agree it's pretty much irreversible. So we can start, and we need to start engaging our young people in conversations about mitigation and adaptation strategies, because quite frankly, they're going to need them, and they are going to have to adapt to climate change, and they are going to have to figure out what to do with the mess that this generation has left them. So rather than sort of sticking your head in the sand and trying to deny it and all the rest of it, it would be far more constructive and productive to actually start talking to young people about what they're going to need to do for the future.
Of course, and I guess, like, still regardless, you know, obviously we've gotten to a point, scientists have said, of basically no return, but there are so many changes that we can make in our day-to-day life, and also, you know, big businesses can make changes as well. So what personal factors about climate change are leading young Australians to feel so strongly about climate action?
Look, I think part of it is, as you said in your introduction, the denial. It's really frustrating when you can look out your window and see something's happening. You know, never mind if you actually have a basic understanding of science, and then just to have, you know, particularly your world leaders going, no, tie a big bow on it, pretend nothing's happening.
That's
actually really frustrating for the average person. It does create a lot of anxiety. People would be much better off just admitting, okay, so, you know, we screwed this up, you're going to have to fix it, and start actually, you know, talking about the sorts of strategies that we're going to need to mitigate or indeed adapt to this. So, I really feel for the young people. They've got every reason to be quite frustrated, annoyed. The average human being, regardless of their brain development level, would be frustrated and annoyed when they can see reality unfolding in front of them and people trying to pretend that it's not. It's a very weird position to be in.
Oh, of course. So how do these fears mirror the conversations perhaps regarding nuclear war in the previous decade?
Yeah, look, so we just sort of reminded readers that was sort of an effect of my day, really. When I was a young person, people were terribly worried about, young people in particular, teenagers were very worried about the possibility of nuclear war, or not just war, but just, you know, things like Chernobyl, and of course that did in fact end up happening. So, it is interesting. I think Australia has sort of remained, I believe, you know, relatively nuclear free, and we've sort of kept that out. And a part of that would have been probably my generation's, you know, fear, and what it turns out to be legitimate fear when we look at some of the accidents that have occurred around the world, of having those sorts of power generators in your country, or, you know, let alone, you know, nuclear weapons and all the rest of it. So, it's interesting to know, you know, it's interesting to think, I suppose, if we hadn't been so fearful of that, would we have had a problem? And, you know, if there hadn't been a lot of protests, and people have forgotten, but 20, 25 years ago, there were a lot of protests around nuclear war and uranium and all that sort of stuff, or nuclear power even. And did that actually sort of stop or stem the tide of those sorts of weaponries and those sorts of power sources being built around the world? It's hard to really know.
Oh, of course. Now, being unable to legally vote for climate action, how can we help younger Australians feel like their concerns are being heard?
Well, I think they did a pretty good job, didn't they? Was it 300,000 of them on Friday? You know, they don't have much of a recourse at the moment except to protest, because you're quite right, they're not a voting bloc. So, the best they can do is, you know, really demonstrate to the government just how annoyed they are about this situation and the fact that the government's sort of engaging in this bizarre process of denial, or certainly at least some aspects of the government are. So, I think they're doing a pretty good job at the moment of getting their message across, and hopefully they will continue. And, you know, in a few years' time, they will turn 18 and they will start voting.
Oh, absolutely. Well, thank you so much for joining us, Rachel. It's been great to have you on the show.
Thank you very much.